Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions started the NFL season in grand fashion, vanquishing the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs 21-20 in a not quite a stunner, but in a fine game at Arrowhead Stadium last Thursday. A lot of excitement all over the place.
Yeah, I think it was a stunner for a lot of people. Maybe not as much locally, because we've seen the progress that this team has made. But nationally, you know, the Lions still have that, you know, reputation of being kind of a downtrodden franchise. And
very downtrodden.
Yeah. But, you know, we've seen recent games of late where this team has shown that it should be taken seriously. And they walk into Lambeau and they knock the Packers off in week 18 last season. Now they go into Arrowhead. They knock off the defending Super Bowl champs. And all of a sudden, I think people's eyes have woken and they're getting the attention that, you know, I don't think we've seen in quite some time.
There's still folk out there that'll say it was a checked out Packers team in week 18
sure,
last year. And then even our own local Mike Tirico said this week one game had an asterisk on it.
Oh God. I know.
we don't need to discuss that.
Well, you know what the silly thing is that since he said that, there's been like three other instances of people saying asterisks over the last like week as well.
It's
like
the new thing now.
It's apparently Chirico is a trendsetter. But yeah, it was, I don't know. There's so many people, you know, push back against that, which I think is the correct answer. You play the games that are in front of you on the schedule. Everybody gets hurt. Everybody deals with injuries. Lions had their own injuries that no one even talked about. And so, yeah, it is what it is. You got to play the team that's in front of you. And good teams find ways to win. And we're starting to see the Lions turn into a good team.
The team in front of the Lions this Sunday is the Seattle Seahawks, who surprisingly lost their opener at home to the Los Angeles Rams. Matthew Stafford and the Los Angeles Rams, 30-13. So they're going to be rolling into Ford Field with an 0-1 record. This is the preview episode of that. First off, we'll talk about transactions. And, you know, sadly for a lot of the fans out there, there are no transactions this week. There was no trade for Chase Young. There was no trade for Mike Evans, and that there's been a lot of talk about those two, and I don't know if we'll see anything like that. I guess anything's possible. Brad Holmes, he likes to make moves. So
yeah, I'm not anticipating anything like that.
All right, let's get into the injuries. The Lions rather healthy in week one, only were missing Emmanuel Mosley. I think everybody else was available for the game.
Correct.
But this week, Taylor Decker with his ankle injury, he has not participated in practice Tuesday or today, which is Thursday.
Yeah, he got injured in the game, played through the ankle injury, and left Kansas City in a boot. And a lot of times that's just a precautionary measure, but sometimes those boots come with like significant injuries as well. I think the word around Allen Park was that the Lions were optimistic, and then at the same time, two practices in and he has yet to take the field is concerning. So it's very possible that he is not going to play in this game. My speculative guess is that they would go back to what they did in 2021, where they shift Sewell over to left tackle and then put Matt Nelson at right tackle and then just call it a day. Now, Decker could still return to practice on Friday. He could still be questionable. He's a veteran, so they wouldn't, you know, it's very likely that they just, if he thinks he's ready to go, that they'll just keep him, you know, keep that option open for him. But we'll find out a lot more at the at 4 o'clock on Friday.
Frank Ragnow, the center toe injury, which has been the same injury now for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He He was full participant in practice Tuesday, Thursday, so he's seemingly healthy.
Yeah, the way I understand it is this injury is just something he's going to be dealing with for maybe his whole career. So he's probably going to be listed as on the injury report every day. Every time that they have to put one out, he'll probably be on the injury report. They'll be doing that because they will have some scheduled veteran rest days for him. And it's easier to just keep him on the injury report all the time in order to execute those. So this week so far, he hasn't had the need to take a day off. Of course, the schedule was a little wonky. They practiced on Tuesday this week instead of Wednesday. And so maybe that Wednesday worked as a day off for him. We'll find out a little bit more on Friday, but I don't think there's any issue with Frank. This is all just management to get him at his peak condition come Sunday.
Defensive side of the ball, cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, ACL hamstring injuries, didn't participate Tuesday and Thursday. So there was some optimism that he was going to be back in the lineup this week. That's not happening.
Yeah, I would say probably not happening for sure. He was limited practices all last week and then inactive because he's still in the reacclimation process from the ACL. Unfortunately, he hurts his hamstring in the process of this, which has now downgraded him to no practice. So I think with both injuries, the chances of him playing are very, very minimal, and he'll probably be ruled out on Friday.
Cornerback Khalil Dorsey with an illness. Didn't participate Tuesday or Thursday.
Yeah, seems to be a bit of a lingering illness, so hopefully it will clear itself because he plays a vital role on special teams. He's a starting gunner, starting kick returner, and the Lions would have to make some, you know, adjustments if he's not able to go. But being that it's just an illness, it's possible that he's able to return in by Sunday.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about that Chiefs game, and we're all still glowing from.
Yeah.
First off, it's kind of what we saw in the preseason, what they were talking about, and even you guys were talking about, is it was a lot of the rookies were making a big difference, and led by Brian Branch, obviously, with his 50-yard interception return for touchdown, but everybody got in the mix. They kept showing the one Jack Campbell play where he dropped back into pass coverage.
Yeah.
Made a nice tip on a pass, and Jahmyr Gibbs, everybody's kind of upset because he didn't play enough. You know, he didn't get enough snaps in his first week of action. It was, you know, somebody even quoted, you know, saying like Ben Johnson saying, we're going to use him in a bunch of ways that people might not expect. And that one of them was by leaving him on the bench. Nobody really would have expected that. So, but a lot of good stuff from the rookies.
Yeah. And Laporta, so I thought played better than what I was expecting as well. The
stats
Campbell
wise, five receptions, 39 yards.
He was the thing that impressed me most about Laporta was his blocking. He was a really like a try hard blocker in college, wasn't this dominating guy. And when he got to the pros in training camp, you know, you saw, you know, there were some signs that he could work in the right direction, but it looked like he was going to be a work in progress with the blocking. But what we saw in week one was really, I think, a big significant jump. Like he was not only locking on to guys, but he was driving guys. He was walling them off. He wasn't giving up any leverage. And so I was very impressed with what I saw from Laporta as a blocker. And that ability to be a balanced tight end, I think, is massive. And he's really going to play a pivotal role. I think he could play a big role this week, too. We'll get into that when we break Seahawks down. But yeah, like Gibbs, he's going to get more play. Like they're going to take it slow with him. I know he's the, you know, 12th overall pick, and there's no need for them to just rush him yet. He's going to get in there. He's going to play. He's going to get more reps. They're going to do more creative things with him, but they're also not going to rush it if they don't need to. With Campbell, that play came that tip play that you mentioned, that was two plays before the Branch interception, and Branch actually made a tackle in between. So that was a nice series of rookie defenders making a play right there that culminated in that pick six. And I think really illustrates what Brian Branch brings to the field.
All right. So great on the rookies, the offense,
mm-hmm.
not as great as we would have expected, right? I scored 21 points, but seven of them were provided by Brian Branch. Another mm-hmm. seven of them were directly related to a fake punt. You know, another great Dan Campbell moment. We're going to be talking as the season rolls on. There's going to be a lot of discussion on his going for it philosophy, which is, I know they say that they've been saying that it's all strategic, but at the mm-hmm. same time, it's also like, he's kind of doing it at random. And that's the strategic part about it, right? Like, we're not going to expect you to do it here. It's insane, you know? There was this big fake punt. You know, Jalen Reeves may have even got the 3 yards, got the first down, which is great. That mm-hmm. eventually put him on a 91-yard drive that ended in a Montgomery touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. But outside of that, offense didn't have that great of a performance. But when the offensive line needed tough yards, especially later in the game, they mm-hmm. were really able to get them.
Yeah, that first drive was actually St. Brown. The St. Brown touchdown was at the end of that 91, I believe, because I think the Montgomery one was a little bit later in the game, in the second
half.
That's the right?
That's the punctuation mark. Okay, yeah, that's what put him in for good. You're right.
Yeah, because they just started asserting their will with their offensive line in that second half. I thought they just started getting more movement. They were being methodical. They were just pushing guys around. They were still, you know, they were gaining just little chunks of yards, but it was working. And then that set up play action, and Goff hits a nice play to Josh Reynolds on that series that ends up with when Montgomery scores. And it was basically a tight game that was sloppy because it was week one.
Yeah, week one.
But when it came down to it, they found a way to win. It wasn't long ago. This team couldn't win on the road at all. You know what I mean? Like where they had like a string
in Kansas City. Yep.
Right. So this game coming up, standing room only tickets on sale. They're talking about trying to break decibel records at Ford Field. Like, I'm expecting this place to be loud this weekend. And I, you know, Kansas City is of course known for that. So, but Campbell was talking about, he was expecting Ford Field to kind of be able to rival that, if not pass what we saw over last Thursday.
Yeah. They'll be looking to blow the roof off on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that they keep bringing up the Bears game from 2011, which is weird. Sure. That here's this random regular season game, you know,
it was a Monday
12
night
years ago. It was a Monday night football game, but they caused 11 procedural Bears penalties between ball starts and delay of games. And the crowd was rather excited. And I will assume we're going to have that again on Sunday. It'll be paramount mm-hmm. that the Lions get off to a quick start, because Seattle is going to be looking to get off to a quick start to kind of quell that noise. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about the Seahawks in a second. Let's talk about the defensive side of the ball between the Chiefs and the Lions. Defense, there were some mistakes. There was also, they got lucky a little bit because the Kansas City receiving corps was terrible, to say the least. A lot of drop passes.
Mm-hmm.
But they only gave up 20 points, and they actually looked really good at times. It was a big change from last year.
Mm-hmm. Like most of the analysts, you know, picking that game were saying like, it doesn't matter because they've got Mahomes, so they're going to win. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Like, Mahomes is just, you know, but he's human and he's fallible, right? And so I think he got frustrated because, look, he officially only had 3 drops. Which is strange because the Lions had 2 drops, yet no one really talks about like Marvin Jones had one, Josh Reynolds had one.
Oh, that's a tough one, that Marvin Jones one.
Mm-hmm. And then Marvin fumbles.
End of the Marvin Jones road.
Hopefully. And then Marvin fumbles in the red zone too. Like that was a backbreaker, right? Like, mm-hmm. I was watching the replay and Gibbs runs it into the red zone. And I'm sitting there watching it, forgetting that Marvin fumbles, because Marvin has never fumbled in his career before that moment.
Yep.
And I was like, wait a minute, how do they not score here? What happened? And I was like, oh, now I remember. Yeah, I do think, side note with Marvin, I do think they scale him back a little bit in favor of Khalif Raymond, but I don't expect Marv to go away. I expect it to be closer to like a 50-50 split as opposed to like a 70-30, which is what it was last week.
70 in the balance to Marvin?
Yes, yeah. Marvin had 39 and Khalif, 39 snaps, and Khalif had 19. So actually that's 60-40. But I expect it to be closer to 50.
It's not 60-40.
Oh, wait a minute. What is it then?
67-33. I mean,
oh, there you go. 67. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I will split the difference. Thank you.
Right. Sorry, I got too ticky tack on that one.
No, I'm just,
I don't remember when David Montgomery scores, but I could tell you what two.
Well, it's the math got me. Yeah. So 2/3 of the snaps went to Marv. And I expect it to be more 50-50 this week. But we were talking about the defense. So maybe
we'll
go back to that for a second. I thought the run defense was better. They gave up 45 to Mahomes, but like that's not terrible. Total. Especially when you're only giving up 45 to the rest of the crew. His receivers were not great, but at the same time, this is the receiving core that he's going to have. You know what I mean? Like, this is what he's got.
Travis Kelce.
Right. But it's not like Kelce is going. And I know everyone's like, oh, if Kelce played, the Chiefs would be like, no. Look, we can
I can what if the Lions into a lot of losses in games they won over the years.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, the one could assume that Kelce would have had a big third down catch here or there, would have kept the drive alive type of thing.
Sure. Would have changed coverage.
It's not what happened.
Right. No, it's not. And it wasn't. But I'm thinking like for the Chiefs moving forward, they're going to add another pass catcher who's an elite pass catcher. But this is the receiving core that he's going to have. And so he doesn't get a free pass here. Like, I don't care that Kelce wasn't there. Like, you deal with it. Like, you. Look, Jameson Williams, it wasn't there. You know, maybe this is a different team if they have him to take the top off and stretch the Chiefs secondary. So, like, we can what if it all day.
Also could have just been a bad game for the Chiefs. They'll have a chance to show, you know, that last week's not indicative of anything, you know, in the weeks going forward. Like, a lot of times we overreact about week one. You know, it's 1 week. It's the first week. Like,
yeah,
well, still some bugs being ironed out.
If we want to like put a pin in the hype train, I will remind you that the Bears
beat the. Away.
I'll remind you that the Bears beat the 49ers last year in week one. So week
monsoon
one
conditions
can be a little bit fluky. At the same time, the Lions have won 9 of their last 11 games. Like this, I don't think that this is fluky. I think this was a Lions team that was prepared to play, and when it was a close game. This is a Lions organization that would typically lose this game, and they didn't. And they held strong because of their defense. They made conversions on offense when they absolutely needed to, and they put the game away. And that's not something that you can say of Lions teams in the past, but it's absolutely something that you can say you've seen out of this team over the last 11 games, for sure.
All right, back on this defense. We were talking about defending the run and the improvements in defending the run. And in fact, you can kind of point to Hutchinson's hustle is what kind of gave up a couple of those Mahomes runs. Because he starts pulling spin moves, and as soon as he went into his spin move, Mahomes would just run around him. And then you'd see later in the game, Hutchinson stopped doing the spin move because they're like, no, he's just going to run away from you the second you do that. And that's when things kind of improved from there, you know, defending Mahomes on the run. Defensive line didn't give too much in that game. Hutchinson did. He's got a lot of hustle, and that, you know, there were no sacks or whatever, but like he hustled, you know, and that was a big plus. the other guys, they were out there. They did defend the run pretty well.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that was pretty much it. You know, like most of the damage, and it was all on the back end, which is surprising.
But that's where they've invested a lot of money. That's where they've invested a lot of their focus. And that's what we have seen since the beginning of training camp and arguably since the spring. Like, the secondary has looked legitimately improved from July. And so, and
even without Emmanuel Moseley.
Right. Yeah. And exactly. So what we've seen is the fact that they showed it in week one, it's starting to say, okay, maybe this isn't just like fool's gold that we're seeing. This is actually, there's some substance here, and they're showing out really well. They switched to more zone looks, which I think plays better to Cam Sutton, plays better to Brian Branch, allows CJ Gardner to roam a little bit more as well. So it'd be interesting to see how things play out. I do think a lot of the defensive game plan was designed specifically for Mahomes. At the same time, I do think a lot of the changes that they made are probably something we're going to see a lot more of this season.
Do we want to say anything else about the Chiefs that hasn't been said? There's been a lot said about the Chiefs
exactly
over the last 7 days, but
exactly,
I guess that's our two cents on it. It was exciting. Couldn't go to sleep afterwards. You know, I watched a lot of that, you know, where they're standing around high-fiving people in the crowd, and just the whole Lions contingent making their way down to the field. You know, there are some photos taken where everybody in the shot, they're all Lions fans. It's like, this isn't at Ford Field, you know.
Yeah, this is a big crowd. It was a big Lions showing in Arrowhead.
A lot of blue dots on the TV screen.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Talk about the Seattle Seahawks. They'll have some dark blue dots in the crowd at Ford Field. There'll be a couple. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks Seattle travels well in general. Lions are favored by 5.5. Did you get that from DraftKings?
Is that the latest? Yes. I think it actually was bumping between 5.5 and 5 and then back to 5.5. And so it's either at 5 or 5.5 or 5. It's right in that range, though. It showed a little fluctuation on Thursday.
And home opener, 1:00, Fox gets the Fox number one crew, which I think they got like once all of last season. Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olson, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi. So this is, Lions have arrived, if we weren't already aware. Referee's Alex Kemp. How about his flag throwing?
It's high. On average, over the last 4 years, he's been above the league average pretty consistently. At least a flag to 3 or 4 more than the average at times. He threw 17 flags in week one in the San Francisco versus Pittsburgh game. 17 flags is a ton. The only maybe saving grace here is he tends to lean a little bit towards flagging the visiting team more than the home team. So he's a heavy-handed flag thrower, but he does lean a little bit more towards flagging the visitors.
Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seahawks, we're used to seeing that. We're going to dig into their lineup in a minute. Mm-hmm. FanDuel shows that the line has dipped to Lions by 4.5.
Oh,
so right. It's slightly different than what you, I mean, but it'll still fluctuate by the time Sunday rolls around.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So no DVOA. We always like going into the DVOA numbers. Like, where does their offense rank? Where does their defense rank? Yep. All of that. None of that's out yet. They've only played one game.
Right.
You know, so whatever it is, it's going to be garbage numbers anyways. Let's talk about their offseason additions. They made a lot of changes in this offseason.
Yeah, they went, they were very focused on the line, both offensive and defensive line in free agency. And then in the draft, they added a lot of players that I liked quite a bit. So we'll see how they end up playing out. But I was very impressed with the draft they put together.
Yeah, leading the way in the draft, they got one of your favorites, Devin Witherspoon, in the first round.
Yep.
Added Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State as one of their wide receivers. former Michigan running back Zach Charbonnet in the second round. He went over to UCLA, had a very nice career there. In third round, edge Derek Hall. Fourth round, defensive tackle Cameron Young. Fifth round, defensive lineman Mike Morris, not the attorney, but the defensive end also from Michigan. No wonder why you love this draft class so much. In the fifth round, they selected center Olu Oluwatimi. Is that the one that was from Virginia? He was the center at Virginia one.
Correct.
And came over, And in the sixth round, selected Jarek Reed. And you have to mention undrafted free agent Jake Bobo, who ran a 4.9 as a receiver at the combine, but did have a prolific college career as a wide receiver. They added center Evan Brown to be the pivot man, defensive tackle Jaron Reed. He returns to the team. Draymond Jones, also another defensive tackle they brought in, and safety Julian Love.
And then also they returned Bobby Wagner, which I forgot to put in our notes here.
Came back from the Rams.
So return a couple of guys, add some free agents, nice draft. I mean, look, Witherspoon, Smith and Nigma, those are highly talented players that would, I had first round grades on. So they, you know, they went where they were supposed to, in my opinion. I wasn't as high on Charbonnet for the Lions, but I do think he was a good back. I'm not surprised to see him go in the second round. Derek Hall's a guy who's going to play his way in eventually. He's just not there yet. Cameron Young and Mike Morris are just depth interior options. Oluwatimi is a guy who I don't know if he's going to – I don't think he would, like, usurp Evan Brown necessarily, but he's a guy that I think could develop into a starter someday. So nice draft, good free agency. With Reed and Draymond Jones, they're trying to – improve their run defense, which was really the weakest part of their defense last year. And in week one, I thought that worked. Bobby Wagner also, having Bobby Wagner around also helps, right? Because he's a really good run defender. But I mean, he made 18 tackles last week against the Rams. At the same time, if your linebackers are making 30 tackles, like instead of your defensive linemen, that's because the either you're playing downhill like really aggressively, or the offense is just, you know, is getting chunk yards on you. And so interesting defensive formation, and we'll probably jump into that in a second, unless you have anything that you wanted to add on their offseason stuff.
Well, stats wise, you did point out that they're trying to improve their defense against the run. They gave up over 2,500 yards on the ground, which is, you know, that's a pretty high number. Over 17 gets almost 150 yards a game. So it's a similar situation to the Lions. So we will start with the Seahawks defense.
Okay.
With their odd look that you talked about. We mentioned both Draymond Jones and Jaron Reed coming back to the team. They'll also maybe show Mario Edwards Jr., and that would be your front line.
Yeah, so basically they run the same style of defense that Detroit ran under Patricia, which is a 3-4 personnel in a 4-3 scheme. So you have that Jack linebacker that essentially is going to line up on the line of scrimmage, and then you have your two off-ball linebackers, and then you have another linebacker option guy that you could add if you want to be a true 3-4 or if you want to reduce to like a 2-4. And so they have a couple of edge rushers that they bring in, their outside linebackers. But they're down defensive linemen. That's really where they're trying to improve the run. But they're not going to stack like a normal 3-4 where they're going to go like 5-0-5 or like a 3-4 would. Instead, they're going to run like with a 3 technique, a nose tackle, and then a strong like power defensive end, and then a stand-up pass rusher. So if you can picture Patricia's defense, this is pretty much what the Seahawks run. So that front is designed. Now, Edwards, he's okay. He's going to be tasked with trying to attack the right tackle, which could potentially be Matt Nelson. So that's going to be a matchup to watch. If it's not Matt Nelson and it's Sewell, because Decker can play, I think there's an advantage for Decker in that scenario. both Reed and Draymond Jones, in my opinion, are mostly run stuffers. They're not really penetrators. So I'm not, they're not guys that are going to, like, you're not going to get a lot of interior pressure from the Seahawks. They're mostly designed at this stage to basically, you know, stone wall at the front, and then they try and get pressure from their edge guys. And so this down defensive front is basically built to try and stop the run.
All right, those linebackers you talked about on the outsides, Boye Mafe and Uchenna Nwosu, with the middle backers, the stand-up backers, off-the-ball backers, Jordan Brooks and Bobby Wagner.
So with the edge guys, Mafe was a second-round pick a year ago. He's developing into his own. There was another second-round pick from a couple years before that, and Daryl Taylor, who's his backup. Nwosu is probably their best edge rusher, I would say. And then Derek Hall, the rookie, who they took in the third round this year, that's his backup. So they've got a decent, set of edge rushers that they can lean on. And their edge rushers really aren't as, they're not bad, but they more flash, right? And I think Nwosu's the guy that I really would be the most concerned about. If they keep him at his more natural position, I think he draws Sewell a lot. And so it's Sewell, you know, obviously is the guy that's prepared for him. I think Sewell would be do real well against him. But if they flip him and they get Nwosu against Matt Nelson, again, if Matt Nelson plays, that's a dangerous combo where I think one of the few areas I would give Seattle an edge in the Lions offense versus Seahawks defense. Nwosu is a guy you really have to pay attention to. On the interior, Bobby Wagner is going to play your whole game. But Jordan Brooks, the other starter, is recovering from injury. And so they're slowly reacclimating him. He played about 60% of the snaps last week. And then Devin Bush, the former Pittsburgh middle linebacker, former Michigan middle linebacker, he picked up around 30% of the off-the-ball snaps. And so that's kind of the three guys that they lean on in order to, as their kind of off-ball guys.
Who in the Seattle front office, like, there's some sort of Michigan pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
There's the Patriots, Pittsburgh, and Seattle. They draft a ton of Michigan guys. They always have.
Well, I mean, forget about just University of Michigan. They got Michigan State guys. They have Nick Valore on the roster from
Central. Oh, yeah, Central. Yeah.
Like that, like there's a lot of just guys from
the state
of Michigan universities.
Well, you know what else? Local
guys, but
it's kind of crazy because there's a lot of Ohio State guys on this roster and a lot of Cincinnati guys on this roster as well. So they dip into that Midwest quite a bit for this Seattle-based roster.
Yeah, it's worked out all right for them. All right, going back to the secondary, we got corners and Trey Brown and Rick. And Woolen, who was the star rookie last year.
Tariq. They call him Tariq now. Yeah,
Tariq Woolen. And then Devin Witherspoon, the first rounder in the slot.
So Devin hasn't played yet, right? He's been basically missed all of camp with his injury. He returned to practice this week for the first time, got in full practices. But I can't imagine he's going to be like, they're going to, let him play like a full complement of snaps. He's going to play, but they're probably going to end up turning to Kobe Bryant, who played the majority of their nickel snaps last week. So
Cincinnati guy.
Exactly. Right. So they've got 80% nickel. So you might see like Kobe Bryant 40% of the time, Devin Witherspoon 40% of the time, so we'll see how it breaks down. But that's kind of my guess with their reacclimation. I don't think Brown's very good. The one corner, Woolen is a good rookie, right? Like he was one of the three defensive rookie of the year finalists, right? He's a good rookie. He's a good young corner. And I think he's got some potential. And when you pair him with Witherspoon there, I think they're going to be really good down the road. But for this game, with Witherspoon coming off of an injury, with Trey Brown not really playing as well, I do think there's some vulnerability in the at the cornerback position in the Seattle defense.
The safeties, Jamal Adams, and well-known to us Lions fans, Quandre Diggs.
So Jamal is also Adams is also coming off an injury. He injured his quad in week one a year ago, and he is now just getting back to practice as well. So he was limited this week. They are expecting him to play, but again, it's not like he's going to come in and play a full complement of snaps. He's going to get his feet wet. They're going to try him out. He's going to play a handful of snaps, and he's not going to be the guy that, you know, you have to really like worry about on a down-to-down basis. Julian Love, that free agent that we talked about earlier, he's the guy who started in place of Adams while Adams was out last week. And I do expect Love to get a bunch of snaps this week. I would say maybe a little bit heavier, 60-80% of snaps as opposed to like, half of them like I might expect in the nickel spot. So thing with this defense, they're very vulnerable over the middle of the field against the pass, right? They focused a lot of their defensive line in order to stop the run. So they're not, they just try and, like I said, they try and create that wall and then they try and bring pressure from the edge. If they can't get pressure, then there's a big gap behind their linebackers. This is one of those defenses where Quandre is going to line up 15 plus yards off of the line of scrimmage as like their deep safety. The other safety is going to line up 10 yards deep off the line of scrimmage. And at the snap, they're backpedaling as well. Like they're trying to create this big kind of umbrella where kind of like like the Fangio umbrella, right? Where they're trying to keep this umbrella of player of secondary players and keep everything in front of them to prevent the big play. For the Lions, that's fine. They're built to play against this kind of Fangio type scheme in the secondary because they just they're comfortable playing in the mid-range center of the field anyways. And that's really where Matthew Stafford tore them apart last game in week one. So this really sets up for Amon-Ra and Sam Laporta to be able to be the guys that make a lot of noise. This really sets up well for Jahmyr Gibbs as a pass catcher out of the backfield, where we saw a little bit of Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs on the field at the same time. This defense sets up well to that. Think about the things that made the Patriots scheme vulnerable when Patricia ran it here in Detroit. They gave up lots of yards to the slot guys, lots of yards to the tight ends, and they had trouble hanging with these, you know, kind of shiftier running backs. That's where the Lions are built with their success. That's where the Seahawks are vulnerable. And that's what I expect them to do. I expect them to just follow the blueprint that the Rams laid out last week and just pick them apart over the middle, spread them out, get those safeties deep, play action sucks in the linebackers, and that middle of the field behind the linebackers and in front of the safety is going to be there pretty much all game.
All right, that's Clint Hurt's defense in his second season. They played at Ford Field last year, surrendered a lot of points, but that Lions team is not even, the same Lions team that's going to take the field on Sunday. So there's really not too much to draw from on that side of the ball. All right, going to the Seahawks offense, Shane Waldron at the helm of that. A quarterback by Geno Smith. And I think we all know the Geno Smith story very well. He was a second round pick. He kind of got an opportunity in New York with the Jets, but he quickly found himself to the bench and he was relegated to being a backup quarterback for a good 10 seasons. Yeah. And then with Russell Wilson leaving to go to Denver, he created an opportunity for himself to take over. He had a great season last year, played great against the Lions in that matchup they had last year. And he's the guy this year.
Yeah, he got a contract.
Didn't play extension. Well in week one. Yep.
So this offense in week one looked okay. Their first four drives were a touchdown, two field goals, and a missed field goal. So the first four drives of the half, they went into the half leading 13-7. The problem is they put up 12 yards of offense in the second half. Total, 12. And only two if you go net, because they had a penalty. So it was a pretty dismal display of offense in the second half, which is shocking because they have a lot of talented players. The big thing that happened, though, was they got injuries. Both their tackles went down with injuries. Tyler Lockett went down with an injury and had to be checked. And Metcalf was off his game. And so all of a sudden, these guys, the rhythm was way out of whack, and they did not look prepared. And Geno Smith was getting pressured. And when he got pressured, he doesn't play as well. And then all of a sudden, boom. So their offensive coordinator is Shane Walton, who was the Rams' passing game coordinator when Jared Goff was there. So you're going to see a lot of wrinkles that, you know, maybe similar to what you see with the Lions, right? Because the Lions scheme is built around Jared's strengths, and that Ram scheme back then played to Jared's strengths as well. So what Shane brings is some similar concepts to an offensive mind. At the same time, the Ben Johnson has added his own wrinkles. Shane Waldron has added his own wrinkles in his system, but it's, again, not too far off from what, you know, it may look familiar to the Lions fans.
Running back position starter, Kenneth Walker III, one of my favorites. Yeah. He had over 1,000 yards rushing last year in his rookie season in 15 games. Got the starting role, you know, down the stretch, had some nice games, had, you know, played fairly well last week, but only had, you know, 60 some yards rushing. But he's the guy with Zach Charbonnet, the rookie, playing behind him.
So a year ago, it was Rashad Penny who was leading their rushing attack, and he ran for like a buck 50 on the Lions. And Kenneth Walker was the rookie. So he had a smaller dosage, and now's his time, right? So now he's the guy who is going to be in that Rashad Penny role. And Charbonnet is in the Walker role from last season. So that's an upgrade, I think, even though you're trading out a veteran in Penny for Charbonnet. I think the talent overall in this room is actually better. This is a run first. Conceptually team, like, they want to run the ball. But at the same time, a lot of their investment has been at the receiving core. A lot of their investment is in Geno Smith throwing the ball. But at Pete Carroll's core, he wants to run it. He wants to be old school. And so he's a guy who's going to, they're going to lean on Kenneth Walker to play. And I'm sure it's going to mean a lot to him to be back in the state of Michigan. And I'm sure the Lions are going to be ultimately very focused on trying to slow him down.
Wide receiver core, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jackson Smith, and Jigba, the rookie. That very strong group of three, much better than what the Lions faced in week one in Kansas City.
Yeah, the issue was Lockett went out with, like I said, with a concussion. And so he only played about 85-90% of the snaps. Metcalf played almost all of them. And Jigba's coming off of an injury. He played around, I think, like 60% of the snaps. Didn't see a ton of production out of them because, again, team only threw for 112 yards total. And like I said, in the second half, there was minimal production as an offense overall. Metcalf had three catches for 47, and I think that led the way. Yep, Kenneth Walker had four catches. But yeah, Metcalf was kind of the guy. Lockett was shut down. Smith Nigma had three for 13. So it's like the numbers were not there. And here's the thing. If you look at the Rams defense, it would be tough for you to recognize a name outside of Aaron Donald. This is a bunch of guys who are not overly impressive defenders. They played very well, though. And they made Seattle look pretty bad. The Lions have a much better defense than the Rams do right now. And so could the Lions do the same thing? Yeah, certainly. At the same time, it seems like, you know, it's a week one thing where we talked about at the top, wonky things tend to happen. And this was a very wonky thing because Metcalf, he's capable of running 100 yards on you every, or you put up 100 yards every week. Lockett, he could put up 100 yards on you every week, right? Like, these guys are 100 yard type receivers. They're really talented. And then Smith-Nigma was a first round pick for a reason. Like, he's again, highly talented. I wonder how much he's limited with his coming off that injury and how many snaps he'll get, but especially early in his rookie season. But this is one of the more talented groups of three that the Lions might face all year. So the question will be, can the offensive line give Geno Smith enough time to throw the ball? And if they do give him enough time, and it will the Lions secondary break down? Because last week they didn't really break down. They had their moments where they gave up, you know, space and had communication issues. But there were a couple of times where Mahomes was scrambling, not because he wanted to, but because he had to, because the secondary was so good in coverage.
Okay, Cody Thompson, Jake Bobo, those are the fourth and fifth receivers. Neither of them caught a ball last week. Tight ends, Noah Fant, Will Disley, Colby Parkinson. Fant is one of the players that Seattle received in the Russell Wilson deal. He did not catch a pass last week, whereas Disley and Parkinson did. Similar group to what we saw in Kansas City last week.
Yeah, and none of them are going to be like the dominant one, which is really kind of surprising because I think Noah Fant is really the best tight end of that group, yet he didn't even play half the snaps last week. And so it's a good group of tight ends, but none of them are really game changers.
Really nothing to add from there.
Huh? I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Fant could be like, he was a great pass catcher at Iowa. You know what I mean? Like, he was really good.
In a long line of great pass catchers from Iowa.
Right. And so they don't utilize them that much. They don't utilize some the tight end group that much at all.
Some said better than Laporta or even Hockenson.
As a pass catcher, maybe at Iowa. Yeah. At Iowa itself, he was probably their best pass catching tight end. Yeah. Wasn't the complete player that Kittle was. But you know, it's he was a really good college option. And I thought he'd be a little bit further along, or maybe it's just the scheme. Maybe it's just how they're using him, or not using him, but he's kind of there.
All right. Seattle's offensive line from left to right, Charles Cross at left tackle. Maybe on Sunday. He's not out. Yeah. He's not considered out yet. Left guard, Damian Lewis, center, Evan Brown, X line. We know him well. Right guard, Phil Haynes. Right tackle, Jake Curran, will be in for Abe Lucas, who was put on injured reserve, so he'll miss at least 4 weeks.
So Lucas is their best offensive lineman. That would be that's going to be a pretty significant blow for them. Curran is not – he's not very good. He's like – he's – I mean
– Matt Nelson?
Yeah, kind of. And the thing is if Cross can't play – which it doesn't look like he will be. Remember, Crosses was a top 10 pick. Last year. Yep. If he can't play, it's very possible that they are going to call up Jason Peters from the practice squad, which is kind of what I think a lot of Seattle people are thinking.
41-year-old Jason Peters.
How good is he going to be against Charles Harris? Or against Aiden Hutchinson? Like,
he's wily veteran. You know, he knows all the moves. He's got all the moves down.
He does, but he's also 41
years
old, coming right off the street midweek. So, that it's a potentially very bad situation for them because their interior is average. Damian Lewis is average to maybe a little bit better. Evan Brown, we all know what Evan Brown
we
can do.
We know how average Evan Brown is.
Yeah, and Phil Haynes is another, he's an average guard. He's not bad. He's not great. But the whole interior is not bad, not great. The tackles were their prime possessions. And if both those tackles are down, their replacement options are not great. I don't even care if it's Jason Peters or if it's Stone Forsythe. Like, they're just not that great. They're not great now. They weren't great a couple years ago when they joined the league either. Like, they just, there's not a lot of depth at tackle in the NFL. And we're seeing it in this game on both sides, right? Because Matt Nelson might end up playing for Detroit, right? So, but that would be that. These two blows would be pretty significant to the Seattle offense, because if Geno's getting pressured, he's not going to be able to get the pass off. He doesn't do well as well with pressure. And I think that was a big reason why last week the offense was just stuck in the mud, was because the tackles couldn't do anything. Geno didn't have time. And if the Lions edge rushers can do something and the secondary stays, you know, stout, you have an opportunity to stunt this, to stunt their offense, even though they are loaded with offensive skill players.
Yeah, they're loaded at the skill positions.
It really comes down, like, there's so many teams now that are kind of built this way. And Seattle isn't built this way. Like, they're built this way right now because of injury, right? But, like, the Bears are built this way.
Accident. Yep.
Yeah, like there's a lot of teams that will build with, like, these highlight skill players and patchwork offensive line. And it's hard to find success, sustained success that way. That's why I like what the Lions have done so much, and that's why I think they're having sustained success, is because their offensive line is able to be a force. And if Cross and Lucas were available, I think this offense would be a lot more dangerous. But the fact that they're not, I think, really puts a hammer on what their ceiling is going to be. And so we'll see how it ends up, you know, playing out. But there's a real big weakness at that offensive tackle spot.
And if there's any way, you know, like, attacking the edges is only going to help that secondary against those elite skill position players. And then there's got to be a focus of stopping the run. And who knows how great Stone Forsythe and Jay Curran will be in helping support Kenneth Walker running the ball.
Mm.
Stone Forsythe, maybe not a great NFL offensive tackle, but is a great NFL name. Stone Forsythe.
Sure.
All right, Seattle special teams. Jason Myers is the kicker, pro bowler. Hit over 90% of his field goals last season. Had 6 over 50 yards.
Have you looked at his career beyond? It's just curious if you have, because
no, but I will right now.
Here's something that I noticed about him: in even years, he plays really, really well.
Yep.
And in odd years, he plays really, really bad. In 2015, he had a PFF grade of 38. And then in the next year, in 2016, it was up to, like, almost 70. And it went like that. 17, down in the dumps. 18, yep, great. Yep. 19, down. Well, he's already hit the upright once this year. And this is an odd year. So he's due for a regression. It's such a weird career. Really high peaks and valleys every other year. There's no consistency from season to season in what he's been able to do. But like you said, he was great last year. We'll see what happened. But at the end of the season, he started getting a little bit shaky. And then a little bit shaky in week one as well.
This is the type of analysis we're looking for. And also, he was Pro Bowler last year, also Pro Bowler in 2018, another even year.
Yep. All
right, the punter is Will Disley. Michael Dixon is the punter. He was in his rookie season, he was a Pro Bowler and all pro, but he's a pretty steady punter. He averaged 59 yards a kick last week. And last year, though, 48.5 yards per punt, and then he gets he had a net of about 44.3, but he's a fine punter.
Yeah. No, I get it. He's like their interior offensive line. You know, not bad, not great. He's a little average to a little above average.
And last week, the kick returning duties were handled by DJ Dallas.
Yep.
And also the punt returns as well. So that's who. So he's the number three running back. He'll also be doing. He's got the return man duties.
Yep. His pass catching is kind of scat back. But yeah, it's mostly that special teams is where he's going to make his noise.
All right. Anything you want to add about this game?
I don't think so. I mean, there's some interesting like history that could be made in the fact that. They've scored over 80 points combined as a team each of the last two times they've met each other. So that like last year,
they offensive scored, explosions,
right? In each of the last two times they faced each other, which was each of the last 2 years. If they combine to go over 80 this year, that'll be the first time it's ever happened in NFL history that teams have had that much offense, three consecutive meetings. But I don't know. I'm not expecting it to go that high.
No, the over still under, too early in the year.
Yeah, the over-under is like 47.5, I think, or something like that. They're expecting it to be low. Last week,
you got it.
No, you got it by a point because you picked you had the lower score.
Oh, that's right. All right.
So you start the week off in the win column per usual. So you will get to pick again. You will get to pick first again. I have already picked my score. If you want me to go first, I won't. But you have the honors since you won.
No,
if you need a second, I'll give you a second.
No. Don't need a second. See, the 47, like Vegas is often right. And you really want to root for the over because that makes for a more exciting game.
Yeah.
But they're going to be right. It's early in the year. I think, you know, this is a big one. If they if they screw this one up, it's same. You know, there's going to be a lot of shouting at same old Lions.
Sure.
So I'm going to go. I'm going to go with the Lions. Let's go 23-20.
Okay, I am going over just slightly right. though. I have the same score with the Seahawks as you do, is 20. So this will really come down to where the Lions fall in our rankings. I have the score 31-20 with a Lions win. I expect double digit.
Easy Lions win.
Yep. I expect them to be comfortable in the second half here. So as long as it doesn't fall, as long as it's not 27-20, then we won't tie. But
right. That's what we'll be staring at the scoreboard at the end of the game on Sunday. 27-20.
I'm going 31-20. I think they're ready to explode. I expect them to come out of the gate and like score on their first two drives. Like I expect it. And if that happens, Seattle will press a little bit, and by the time they go into the half, I'm expecting them to be in a comfortable lead, and then the second half to be a little bit quieter as the Lions kind of, you know, tick time off the clock. So I want to go higher than 31-20. It's like you said, it's too early in the season. I think these offenses have the potential to do it. I'm not buying it based on what I saw out of Seattle. And like you said, it's still early. There's going to be mistakes. It's going to be hard to score in week two here.
Winning this game would be so key too, because they win, you know, and they're going to be 2-0. If they win, they'll be 2-0. They'll be hosting the Falcons the week after that. Then they have a short break for the Packers. So that game, that's a total toss-up to me. Even though they've shown they can win at Lambeau, they're they'll only be off for 3 days, and then all of a sudden, poof, Lambeau Field. Luckily, it won't be snowing or anything. Well, who knows? Who knows what will happen? But in all likelihood, it won't be snowing. Then they host the Panthers, and then they go to Tampa. So if you
another
look at the first six games, they could start really strong if they get the win on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, look, the Falcons game is you're carrying the momentum, right? You're carrying the positive energy.
And they don't get caught in a trap, get ready for the Green Bay
game. Well, that's the thing that I think people were a little bit worried about with this game. But this game is a revenge game. Like, Aaron Glenn is not happy that they gave up almost 100 points over the last two meetings with him as D coordinator. So he wants to play. He wants to come and punch him in the mouth. And so I expect them to be ready for that. If you can beat the Falcons, you're 3-0. And then a Panthers game is another revenge game, right? I'm not scared of the Bucs. Like, they could have a really nice record going into the Baltimore in week 7. And then that Raiders game is on Monday night. Like, they could go into the bye real well if they keep this, if they can take advantage here. But they got it.
They can create some momentum.
Yeah, they've got to create an opportunity for themselves in order to take the next step, right?
Yeah,
they've won 9 out of 11. This is a team they should beat. They need to beat them. Everything says they should win, right? I mean, everything. The home crowd's should be crazy. They have a better defense. They've improved in the area where they're strong. Seattle's not, and it should be a good game, but Seattle has been a pain in the Lions' butt. And so it might be closer than what maybe even I'm projecting, but it should be fun. I think the crowd will play.
Now the crowd is, they'll be going nuts at the very least, right from the get go. It'll be going nuts. If the game stays close, tight, it'll be going nuts. If the Lions take a big lead early, it'll be going nuts. The only thing it'll be bad for the crowd as the Seattle gets a big jump early, goes up, 14-0, some crazy stuff happens,
first that's drive huge.
Score, get a fumble or something, and then all of a sudden, that'll quiet our crowd down. But, otherwise, they should be going crazy.
Whoever gets that early lead, it's going to be critical, because that puts some pressure on the other team. Seattle is not going to want to go down 0-2 to start the year. Like, they would be in a bad, bad way.
They're a dangerous animal right now. Because they should have beaten, the Rams. They should have been 1-0, where it's, they could have lost this game. No big deal. They wouldn't be digging themselves that big of a hole. But here they would be. Starting 0-2 is rough.
Yep. So I'm with you.
So no movement on any reviews on the Apple Podcasts app or on the Spotify app. But still, thanks everybody who's reviewed us up to this point and gave us 5 stars or whatever amount of stars you gave. And anybody who's wrote a written review, thank you for all of that. And this is it. Lions created themselves a lot of opportunity in week 1. Hopefully they could do it again in week 2 and they'll be off and rolling. And this will be the most fun year of the podcast ever.
Oh,
do you have anything? Well,
I'm banking on that.
Yeah. They'll kind of, it's not a very high bar. So
yeah, but we're this fan base is due, right?
Oh yeah,
they're owed it.
Yeah, so I hope we get what we're being owed, and that's it for this week. And until next time, let's go Lions.